Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show.
It's the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. The Early Morning Late Show. Get your day started.
Good morning. It's Monday, and I'm not Bill Arnold. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill Arnold, who will take a little vacation the first time in 10 years, or so he says. Although I'm sure every day working the Early Morning Late Show is almost like a vacation, I think. It's very similar.
I think I see the looks in the eyes. So, yeah, very, very similar.
Relaxed. I spent some time last week vacationing at a lake cabin, and
nice.
I do recommend that. Although, lakes these days, kind of water is a little, it can be damaging if it comes a lot in a hurry.
That's very true. Unfortunately, we're seeing that in Texas today.
Wow. Flooding in Houston showing no signs of letting up as the remains of Hurricane Harvey continue to drop water in the region measured by the foot. They're talking another 25 to 30 inches here in the next few days as the remnants of Hurricane Harvey just sort of swirl around and around Houston and, Galveston, Corpus Christi. It is a mess there. Lots of folks trying to get out of the way of that, and not much they can do. Houston, the major center for the nation's energy industry, and damage is expected to be in the billions of dollars. So that's one of the side effects. But obviously, friends and neighbors, family members that are being affected by the 500-year flooding event. Houston area had already had, 46 inches of their normal 49 inches of rain, I think, during the year, since June. They've had 46 inches of rain since June, looking at another 25 to 30 here in the next few days.
That's hard to even comprehend.
The storm just kind of, it's just sitting there, dumping rain.
And if you look at some of the pictures that have been coming out this weekend of people waiting to be evacuated, I think the one that really stuck in my head were some nursing home residents.
Yeah.
And they were in wheelchairs, and they're barely keeping their elbows out of the water. They're just waiting to be evacuated. That just breaks your heart.
Yeah. The good news is there's a lot of groups that are on the scene. Texas Baptist Men, the North American Mission Board, Disaster Relief Teams, American Red Cross. There's a Southern Baptist Disaster Relief. Obviously, Samaritan's Purse, SamaritansPurse.org, ConvoyOfHope.org. There's SalvationArmy.com, a couple of areas that you could consider getting involved in. Red Cross and Apple have made it possible to give relief through iTunes. So some options and opportunities there. And we continue to pray for our friends and those that are affected by this. Coming up, we'll talk with someone from a little bit north of Houston, actually in the Dallas area. George Yancey is going to join us. He's a professor in North Texas. At the University of Texas, North Texas, professor of sociology, University of North Texas. So we'll get George Yancey on the phone with us here in just a moment, as well as David Aikman joining us here in the second half of this hour. So all that's coming up on the Early Morning Late Show, a verse out of Proverbs 18, verse 10, maybe something to hang on to today. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run to it and are safe. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill Arnold. The Early Morning Late Show continues in a minute.
The rising of the sun to the going down of the same. You are my God, and all I want to do is praise your name. I praise your name with lifted our voices and proclaim. You are my God, and all I want to do is praise your name.
The Early Morning Late Show is underway. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill Arnold on vacation. Think of me as unreliable, maybe. I don't know if that works. Glad to have you tuned in today. And looking forward to spending a little time talking with George Yancey. George is professor of sociology at the University of North Texas, and he has studied over the years academic bias and also has conducted research on anti-Christian attitudes in the United States. and has been writing on that for a number of years and does a lot of research conducting critical but non-hostile research that helps Christians to better serve their communities and the larger society. We want to talk to George about just listening a bit and how we come to some sort of agreements in this very divisive world in which we live. George, welcome back to Faith Radio. Good to have you on.
Thanks for having me back.
George, maybe just, you're in, I think, Dallas area or North Texas, maybe not immediately affected by the serious flooding in Houston, but I'm sure it's not so much fun there these days.
You know, we're far enough north that we're probably getting the best end of it. I mean, if anything, our summer's not quite as horrible as it normally is. But I mean, of course, you know, that we definitely would pay the price of having our normal horrible summer if we did not have to see all of the flooding and damage that's been done in Houston. It's just been, egregious what's taken place.
George, you wrote recently on one of your blog spots talking about the importance of listening and active listening, and we are certainly in a time in our country where there doesn't seem to be a lot of listening. Even if we wanted to have dialogue, that kind of gets shut down even before it gets started. Now, talk about what you're seeing.
Yeah, you know, of course, I started thinking about active listening as it concerns race relations, but I definitely think it's also viable when we're looking at how polarized we are in our society, you know, however you want to do it, right versus left, Christian versus non-Christian, or however. And the issue is we talk a lot, but we don't listen. And by listening, we don't listen so that we understand where the other person's coming from. Not that we have to agree with the other person. We think that if I really understand this person, that means I agree with you. It doesn't mean that at all. But it means that I understand your perspective and why you have your perspective, which I think humanizes people. So that we can have a conversation where we can find some agreement, some compromise. Compromise has become a dirty word. Compromise is a word in which we can live with each other by, because, you know, the only alternative to compromise is to convert everyone to exactly what we believe. And, of course, that's as a Christian, I would love to see more Christians, but I live in the real world, too, and people are going to choose not to be a Christian, and I'm going to have to live in this world, and I have to learn how to live with them. And so, that's one thing that's disturbed me, is that we seem to have lost the art of being able to truly listen to one another nowadays.
You're a professor at a university where, you know, we've been wondering about all the kind of the safe spaces being created and the tenderness of many university students. I mean, are they willing to listen? Or, I mean, we don't even want to hear, you know, ideas that might be different than what we have grown up with. I mean, it's kind of an unusual season in our country, it seems.
Yeah, the whole idea of safe space, you know, that really seems to have exploded in the past few years. It's really the opposite of what I would want. I mean, the idea of a safe space where you can go away from ideas and away from others who offend you is exactly the opposite. We should talk to people that we think their ideas are offensive to us, not that we want to agree with them, but to understand where they are coming from. And the idea of a safe space is the opposite of that. It's like, well, you offend me, therefore I'm going to create this space where I don't have to hear from you. So, yeah, unfortunately, the university, which I love, which I work at, has not been a good way to promote active listening. In fact, some of what we do actually works against that.
Are there actually practical steps that we could all apply today in terms of doing some active listening, whether it's at work or in a home, relationship, where it might be, or at school?
Well, you know, if someone wants, you know, I would like to see us develop a culture where you listen more. And so, you know, you start with where you're at. I would just say find someone who you disagree with, but you have some relationship with them. You have a phone conversation, take them out to a Coke or lunch or something like that. And then pick a topic and then just listen. And here's the sort of process of active listening. Ask them how they feel about an issue. Listen to what they say. Don't think about your response. Just listen to what they have to say. Once they're finished, then in your own words, put back what you heard them saying. You know, here's what I heard. You feel this way because da 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 da. see if they agree. If they don't agree, then try to see whether or not, you know, how you can put in your own words to where they would agree. At that point, when they agree, you know how they feel about a given issue. And so when that issue comes up, you could dialogue with them in a way that respects their point of view. Now, in the ideal world, they would also want to listen to you. But I think if you go into it expecting that, then they may become more defensive. So I would suggest going in and just trying to listen. And then hopefully over time, as you listen to them, they will want to understand you a little bit better. But, of course, there's no guarantees. But if we had a culture where that happened more and more, then I think it would be more expected rather than something that does not happen hardly at all.
In a moment, we're going to talk more with George Yancey, and we'll find out if he's allowed to speak or if people don't want to hear what he has to say, his viewpoints. As a professor, he's a professor of sociology at the University of North Texas, and we'll talk a little bit about, you know, freedom of speech and conscience on campuses across the country, as well as some discussion about identity politics. That's all ahead. George Yancey is guest with us this morning on the Monday edition of the Early Morning Late Show. Eighteen past the hour. It's the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill today. Glad to have you along. George Yancey is with us today. George is professor of sociology, University of North Texas, a great writer, a researcher, sociologist. And George, I noted that today, religious leaders from many faiths are in Washington, D.C. today to protest President Trump's moral leadership. The 1,000 ministers march for justice comes on the 54th anniversary of Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech. The rally is expected to start near the MLK Memorial in the National Mall. This morning, the rally was organized by the Reverend Al Sharpton's National Action Network. I was at the gym over the weekend and noticed, of course, I only spent about, you know, 3 minutes exercising, so I didn't follow along. But the Reverend Sharpton was on speaking, and he was pointing out that at the Trump rally last week that they had the, I think he referred to it as the token black person in the background picture. And does that bother you when, you know, Reverend Al and others, you know, look at you and others that maybe have a conservative viewpoint, say you don't really represent the black population?
Well, I don't represent the black population. No one single person represents the black population. I'm not a Trump supporter, but I am more conservative than Al Sharpton, so we would disagree more than probably we would agree. Al Sharpton has the right to have his protests, have his rallies, and I would defend his right to do that. I'm a big believer in free speech, when he says something that misconstrues, then, you know, I want to be one of the people voices that correct him. And if he implies that he represents the entire black voice, he's incorrect. The black voice is much more diverse than it used to be.
There is something you wrote on recently, though, about identity politics. And that seems like that is adding new people all the time, maybe. Say a bit more about that.
Yeah, you know, identity politics used to be something that we saw more on the left than the right. You know, identity politics is, you know, you appeal to people based on their identity, based, you know, on a variety of things. It could be race. Obviously, it could be sexuality. It can be gender. It can be, you know, a lot of different things. And so the whole thing, I guess, is what Sharpton was probably, I didn't see this rally personally. What Sharpton's trying to get at is, you know, support me in part because I'm black, you're black, and I have your interests at heart. So identity politics promises that, you know, you support us, and we're going to take care of you as a black person or as a whatever. And they used to be something that we only really saw on the left. Well, Trump really has brought it to the right. You know, Trump had an appeal, you know, to identity politics. And I'm not saying that all his voters were white nationalists or anything like that. But there was this sort of appeal towards, hey, I'll take care of you as a European American. You know, you've lost your place in society. And so what we have now is identity politics on both sides of the aisle. I just don't think that's the healthy way to go in our society. I think that, you know, identity politics, I understand its appeal, but solutions, I think, to the problems in our society are going to have to encompass most or almost everybody. and identity politics has this sort of narrow focus, you know, take care of my group, and then I'll vote for you. And sometimes the solution to take care of your group may be good for your group, but it's bad for the rest of society. And so I just, you know, I see it problematic that identity politics up on the right, not that, you know, they didn't have the right to do so, but I guess I have a problem with identity politics in general. And so, you know, when it develops more on the right, you know, I guess I'd rather not see it develop either way. But that's the direction we've gone in our society lately.
It's certainly an opportunity, once again, for the church to bridge those divides, right, and to represent the full body of Christ, regardless of, you know, various identities.
Well, one of the reasons why I've done a lot of my work previously in multiple churches was because I believe the church could transcend different identities. And this is not to say that, as an African-American myself, there are certain things that impact me more than a European-American, and I shouldn't be concerned about them. But I do see that the body of Christ can transcend those identities, you know, put them in the proper perspective, but also have an overarching goal, an overarching value that can bring us together. I think we still can do that, but it's going to be much harder since it becomes much more polarized in our society.
George, it's back to school time, and I know you do a lot of research, but also the teaching. Are there any issues with, you know, academic freedom or freedom of speech, conscience for you as a professor? And, you know, I know you've done a lot of discussion and research on religious freedom. What are you sensing on the university and college campuses today?
You know, it's an interesting time as far as academic freedom. I'm actually working on a symposium that we're going to have come this, I think, early October on academic freedom. You know, there are some places like University of Chicago that's made a bold statement on academic freedom, and I definitely appreciate that. And then you have other places, you know, most notably in California, where academic freedom is challenged again and again and again. Berkeley comes to mind. You know, so it's not that you can say that, you know, that everywhere academic freedom is in peril. I do think that there are some places that are beginning to see the value of academic freedom. But I still think overall we have a problem with academic freedom in academia, and that certain ideas are not allowed to even be presented, much less debated. And that's the problem. I've always been of the opinion that if you don't like an idea, figure out a debate and debate that idea. Don't shut that idea up. And I think that actually does more damage than good. You know, they drive people underground, and then they do nasty stuff. And so I'm a big proponent of academic freedom. I think we may be turning a corner, but it's too early to tell. But I'd love to see more University of Chicago type of stuff happening.
Yeah. George, I know you're writing regularly and doing research on this. If people want to read more about your get connected with you, what's a good way to do that?
Well, you know, I've started a new blog called Shattering Paradigms. So, you know, that's one way you can keep up with my work. And then I do have my own website, georgeyanthony.com, where, you know, you can see some of my books and also see some of the stuff that I've already written. And as I publish new stuff, I'll update that website. And also when I get speaking engagements, I'll put that there as well.
George, glad to have you back with us here on the morning show. Nice to talk with you again.
Thank you, and God bless.
George Yancey is professor of sociology at University of North Texas. You can find out about his writings, written some great books. GeorgeYancey.com is the website. Now, coming up in a moment, we'll turn to Breakpoint and talking about the new sexual ethic. And there's a relationship with the religious liberty. And we're going to talk about that Colorado baker who got in trouble, not surprisingly. All that coming up here in a moment. And then in about 10 minutes, stay tuned as we talk with one of our favorite guests here in the morning show. It's David Aikman, and we'll talk foreign affairs here on the Early Morning Late Show. I'm Neil Stephan, sitting in for Bill Arnold. This is the Early Morning Late Show, 31 past the hour. I'm Neil Stephan, sitting in for the vacationing Bill Arnold. Think of me as Irresponsible or counterfeit Bill, something like that. Say, if you're new to Faith Radio, I want to say a special welcome to you. More and more people are streaming online every day. You can download the Faith Radio Network app at your iTunes or Google Play site and start enjoying the programming wherever you go, anytime, anywhere, or if you're listening on our new FM signal in the Twin Cities at 97.5 FM. I want to just say a special welcome to you. Glad to have you along. Help us find out more about us online at myfaithradio.com. Kids getting back to school, maybe that's upset your teen. Mark Gregston has a word about that coming up in about 8 minutes. And then in 10 minutes, Dr. David Aikman joins us for a Monday morning foreign affairs conversation. That's all I had in the Early Morning Late Show. Thirty-six past the hour on a Monday morning, the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold and Neil Stavem sitting in for the vacationing Bill. We love a vacation in Houston. Not the case, though. Flooding shows no signs of letting up as the remains of Hurricane Harvey continue to drop water in the region. In fact, they're looking at, they've had almost a year's worth of rain already in the last few months and looking at another 25 to 30 inches of rain that has fallen since Harvey hit the city on Friday. More expected this week. And there's a lot of work going on there, obviously. It's a 500-year flooding event. SamaritansPurse.org, ConvoyOfHope.org, SalvationArmy.com, a few of the resources where you can be involved. Of course, Franklin Graham from Samaritan's Purse reminds us that this is a big cleanup, and the work is just beginning.
Samaritan's Purse, we already have our response teams in Texas. They left North Carolina last week, and we'll be going in when the floodwaters recede, and we can get to people's homes. We're not first responders, but what we do is we help people re-tarp their roofs, cut the trees off their houses, mud out their homes, help them take their wet furniture outside and take the wet carpet out of the house and help them to begin to get their house back to where they can get it rebuilt. And we've worked in Texas many times. We were there last year in Houston and Angleton, helping after the floods last year. We have a lot of partners down there. We've already called when we knew the storm was coming, and we've already got church partners that we're going to be working with. But the people right now, they just need our prayers. You see these rescues taking place. This is life and death for many people.
Franklin Graham talking about the reality in Houston and the South Texas area. Lots of concern there. So thank you for your prayers, and you can get involved in the North American Mission Board, NAMB.net. Be a good place to check as well. In fact, Red Cross and Apple made it possible to give relief through iTunes. Just another opportunity, way to be involved there. Well, coming up in a moment, we're going to talk to Dr. David Aikman. I always love the opportunity to talk foreign affairs with him. A lot of issues to get to, North Korea, Venezuela, Ukraine, all that just ahead. First, though, a word from Mark Gregston. Maybe your teen's kind of struggling to get back into the routine. He has a word for you right now.
Even the most calm and collected people get angry sometimes. But with some teens, it seems like the smallest thing can ignite a firestorm. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. When it comes to teens, anger is usually an emotional response when they don't get something they want or when they lose something they once held dear. And I'm not talking about cars or laptops, but deep felt emotional needs. So if your teen is constantly popping off with anger, don't get distracted by the behavior. Instead, with love and patience, try to uncover what's causing it. Most teens can't really identify the source of their anger, but once you get to the root cause, you'll have the tools you need to help him get to a better place.
For more parenting tips from Mark Gregston, go to ParentingTodaysTeens.org. That's ParentingTodaysTeens.org.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
Great walk-up music for our friend Dr. David Aikman joining us today via Skype. And David is a longtime foreign affairs correspondent, award-winning, and a wonderful author and writer, and I always enjoy the opportunity to hear what he has to say. And David, Neil Stavem here, glad to have you back on. I know that you're a regular contributor to the morning show, and it's just good to talk with you. I was thinking about Mark Gregson's comments about teenagers popping off with anger, and I thought that leads nicely into our conversation with what's going on in North Korea. I mean, the leader's not a teenager, but he certainly he has some anger issues, doesn't he?
Yes, he certainly does seem to have teenager type tendencies, and he obviously needs careful treatment to make sure he doesn't press the wrong button.
Well, this weekend, he did, in fact, press some buttons, right? Give us an update.
That's right. Yes, he set off three rockets. Now, of course, they weren't aimed at Guam or even at Japan or even at South Korea. They landed in the city, and one of them, I think, was a complete failure. So he sort of demonstrated to his people that he was not cowering away because the United States had said a firestorm of response would come upon North Korea if he did anything foolish. But he was just saying, here I am. I'm doing something that makes them pay attention.
Well, I think I had seen one report that said we were kind of caught off guard by this, that this was maybe new rockets or ones that we didn't realize that they had or capability of.
Well, these were short-range and intermediate-range rockets, and we knew that they had those, but in light of the fact that they had tested long-range rockets in an earlier sequence, it was a little surprising that they went back to the short-range ones for this particular demonstration.
Of course, what American troops are doing joint exercises or planning those with South Korea, right? So this is tensions are heightening.
Well, that's right. I mean, every year that there are joint operations between the United States and South Korean military, the North Korea has a hissy fit and threatens to do this, that, and the other, and they put their own military on a heightened alert. And you never quite know if they're going to jump the wrong way, so you always have to be very careful in case they do jump the wrong way. But I think in this case, they are basically getting used to the fact that the sanctions against them are going to cost $1 billion a year in exports to China that they won't be able to sell. And this must be hitting home because it's a substantial part of North Korea's export income.
Oh, you spent many years working in China as well as other parts through the Middle East. But any sense that China will take a lead role in keeping their neighbor a little more in line?
Well, that's a good question, because what does China fear most? An actual conflict in the region or a collapse of North Korea? And I think the answer is that they certainly don't want to see a conflict between North Korea and the United States. But what they're really concerned about is that the North Korean regime may implode, maybe in the manner of Eastern European countries giving up communism. And that would lead to all kinds of scenarios that China is very concerned not to have to deal with. For example, a Korean peninsula basically under the control of the United States and South Korea, that would be a very serious threat to China's sense of security in the area. So they definitely don't want to see that.
Well, talking about security in the area, the president gave a speech on the troop levels and activity in Afghanistan. That's been a ongoing. It's been 16 years we've been there, and of course, you know, they've had battles going back much longer than that. What is your thoughts on the president's policy or his speech?
Well, what you have to do is to take that speech in the context of the platform he was running along in foreign policy as it relates to Afghanistan during his presidential election campaign. He basically told the American people, I don't want to have any more to do with nation building, so we're going to get out of Afghanistan. And what obviously happened is that he was faced, well, first of all, Steve Bannon was no longer in the White House, and various other important people had left who had supported strongly the president's America First agenda during the campaign. So when he basically listened to the advice of his generals, who said, look, the only thing we can do is we can up our troop strength and we can inflict certain kinds of limitations on the Taliban, he sort of said, well, I think I'll take that better than having to fight off every other suggestion. But it's a very difficult decision to take, because if you think about it, most American wars against insurgency efforts, whether we're talking about Indochina in the 1970s or Afghanistan in the 90s, have involved not combat not only against the actual guerrilla fighters, but against the population that supports them and from which they recruit. So you can't, I don't think you can really separate combat operations from dealing with the civilian population that gives rise to these insurgency incidents. So I think it's going to be a very difficult issue for the United States military to make decisions on and to give advice to the president on. The record of dealing with military advice in these matters is not particularly good for previous presidents.
Yes, or as well as education campaigns or trying to build a solid government. More with correspondent David Aikman coming up in just a couple of minutes. Thank you for tuning in this morning here on the Early Morning Late Show, 47 past the hour. So appreciate the opportunity to connect with David Aikman, who is an award-winning journalist, foreign affairs contributor to the Early Morning Late Show. And he is with us today as we talk via Skype about world issues. And we've talked a little bit about North Korea and Afghanistan. And as you mentioned, David, that Steve Bannon is out at the White House. Maybe Rex Tillerson has a little more standing, perhaps, with the president. And I wonder if that will make a difference in places like Ukraine. I noticed that the general was visiting Ukraine, and we're thinking about maybe providing some armaments there.
That's right, yes. The Ukrainians have been asking for defensive armament for a long time, and the discussion came up recently of possibly providing them with Javelin anti-tank weaponry that the Ukrainians could use against any armor that comes at them from Russia or from the eastern parts of their country. But the argument against that is really quite strong. If you provided those kind of self-defensive armaments for the Ukrainians, you're really basically saying to Russia, look, we're going to prop these guys up even if you don't like the regime. We do, and they're going to accept our support. That runs you the serious risk of getting into a proxy war with Russia, which I don't think anybody in the United States wants to do, either now or at any time in the future. The Ukrainians do have certain defensive needs which the United States might be able to fill if the requests were very specific and detailed, and the U.S. could help in that without sort of provoking the Russians into feeling that America wanted to put its nose into close relations between Russia and Ukraine. But I think Secretary Tillerson was walking fairly near the edge of a very sort of precipice place in international relations when he was in Ukraine recently.
I wonder, speaking of poking your nose in, do we want to be involved in Venezuela at all? I mean, that's another hot spot and potentially getting much hotter.
Well, indeed, Venezuela is a problem for all of its neighbors, because there have been so many people fleeing Venezuela, partly out of fear of the security services cracking down and creating a dictatorship, partly because the Venezuelans simply don't have enough food to eat. I mean, the average weight of Venezuelans has apparently diminished substantially over the past year. They're just not getting enough food in. And that's been really the result of economic mismanagement under the Maduro regime, and before that under the Chavez regime. And Maduro seems to be determined to put his stamp of government and policy on the whole country at the risk of alienating vast amounts of his people by changing the institutions of government. And in fact, the situation is so bad that the president of Peru recently said there's a serious danger of a civil war developing in Venezuela. And I think at that point, that is the sort of scenario which prompted President Trump to sort of mutter about a possible military solution for Venezuela. But I don't think any American organized military solution is practicable unless you had a situation where the Venezuelan government was really asking for help, which the United States might be willing to provide. But it's a very difficult situation, and there's no end in sight at this point.
And so I think, you know, all of what we talked about, you know, whether it's North Korea or Afghanistan or, you know, Ukraine or Venezuela, that, you know, military isn't the only solution, and we don't always come up with other very good solutions, perhaps, in terms of supporting democracy or freedom.
Right, that's true. I mean, the United States has always tried, in most parts of the world, to provide a forum for elements of any country who want to move that nation towards democratic governance. And on the whole, it's worked fairly well. But in a situation as volatile as Venezuela, where you've had two presidencies in a row in the Venezuelan side, absolutely dedicated to enmity with the United States, forging a very close alliance with Cuba, and even with Russia or with anybody who doesn't like America, this puts the United States in a very delicate position. We have to tread rather carefully in order not to stir up a complete turmoil in the country.
Hmm. David, I always appreciate your insights, and treading carefully should be probably good words for us, whatever we're doing today, I would say.
Yeah, well, let's hope we can do that. Maybe if the advisors, senior advisors within the Trump administration can get their act together, we might see more beneficial policies coming forth.
We look forward to the next visit. Dr. David Aikman, foreign affairs contributor here to the Early Morning Late Show. David, thanks so much. Have a wonderful day. Glad to have you on again.
Thank you, Neil. You have a great day, too.
Neil Stavem sitting in for Bill Arnold. It's the Early Morning Late Show. We'll wrap it up here in just a moment. Well, thanks so much for tuning in to the Early Morning Late Show. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill Arnold. I heard Bill over the weekend asking George Fraser in Real Recovery a question. I thought I would just leave it with you today, just to kind of give you a little taste of Bill while he's on vacation.
George, if you could have a superpower, would you want to be able to fly or just sleep through the night without having to get up to go to the bathroom?
Let me get back to you on that.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Well, if you are getting up early tomorrow morning, I'll be back with you as well as Bill taking a little time off. Glad to have you listening. And I hope that you can stick around for the rest of the day. Some great programming coming up, including Live the Promise later this afternoon. Susie Larson is going to welcome back Dr. Thomas Blee and John Turnipseed into the studios. They're going to continue their discussion of the book, How to Save a Surgeon, Stories of Impossible Healing. It is an amazing story. And you'll want to listen in for that. Live the Promise this afternoon, 3 o'clock Central Time with Susie Larson here on Faith Radio. Thanks for listening. A couple weeks away from our fall share, and we're looking forward to having you partner with us in that important need for Faith Radio. And we'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.